Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharicana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today, we're joined by our guest, Lamont Pearley, Pearley of the African American Folklorist. Pearley is an award-winning independent filmmaker and radio journalist. Pearley is an applied folklorist, ethnographer, African-American traditional music historian, and practitioner enrolled at WKU in the African-American and Folk Studies programs.
The founder and editor of the African-American Folklorist magazine, Pearley also hosts a weekly segment on WKU Public Radio and NPR called The African-American Folklorist. He was inducted into the New York Blues Hall of Fame as Great Blues Historian and TV Radio Producer in 2017 and Great Blues Artist 2018. Pearley works in folklorist academic and public sectors where his expertise assists communities and local advocacies to document their stories and strategize and implement long-term goals for cultural sustainability. Welcome to Speak On It, Lamont Pearley.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be here with you too.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're looking forward to this conversation today. So, the African American Folklorist, on the magazine's website, there's a great line where you're quoted as saying, "We aim to put the story of the blues people in the proper context told by blues people." Can you share with our listeners more about what you mean by this? Who are the blues people and what is the context of their story?
Thank you for asking that question, because the blues people are what is considered told to be and classified as Black Americans, African Americans, so-called Black folk. So to get into the putting the blues people, and wait, before I get to that, why we're called the blues people, because we are the people of the blues. The culture, the behavior, the vernacular, the music, the food, the country, the land makes us the blues people. I just had to establish that. I'm sorry.
No, I get it. I get it. I hear you.
Okay, so now, what do I mean by putting our story in the proper context? Folkloristics and ethnography and anthropology, sociology, all of these ologies and isms were, for the exception of W.E.B. Du Bois, who actually is the first to utilize these methods at the turn of the century in the Philadelphia Project. Outside of him, most of these stories were documented by other, or those who consider us as other.
Right.
Right. And so they were, so the documentation was by other, for other. And it was at a different or a particular time where the ideology and society had a different belief system.
Right.
What they documented was necessary and it helps us. But it was through their lens, whether it was a racially charged or motivated lens, whether it was a religiously charged lens, or just pure ignorance, and not ignorance in a negative way, just not knowing, but it was someone else's documentation. And you and I, we all know that it is hard to believe that a white person would go into the backwoods of the Black country and get information that some Black folks or educated Black folks couldn't get going into this area. So what we try to do is capture new stories or parallel stories from that time to now, for us, by us, almost, And then on the flip side, take those that they captured, no need to interrogate it anymore, just put it against the stories that we're able to verify. Go to my mama, our grandmama, great-grandmama. Is this how they, this is what he said, is this how it happened?
Right.
And we put it in a proper context.
Because a person's perspective is everything. Is everything, and the way you view it, the lens that you view it from, is different depending on who you are sometimes.
It is, right? So one of my favorite people in history is Charlotte Fortin Grimke, right? And it's just really sad because her biggest hangup was she couldn't connect with who she felt was her people when she went to St. Helena Island because they're two different worlds. Right? They both found this connection through the music, but they couldn't connect. So you know, it's really imperative, it's vital to have that understanding when we're either interrogating or documenting, right? Or doing oral history or any type of surveys or genealogy, right? Because it can come to a point where you have, if I don't trust you, I'm not going to tell you.
Right.
It's pretty much what I'm getting to, right?
It's true.
I hope
and that's reflected a lot of times. I'm sorry. It's reflected when you talk about slave narratives a lot of times. Some people say, oh, they're not accurate and all. And, you know, to that point, when I found or discovered one for my second great grandmother, everything that I was reading was exactly what my grandmother told me. Everything. So, as a bluesman and a self-described New York City-based descendant of the Great Migration, you made a trip to the Deep South in the mid-2000s to bury relatives, which is also mentioned on the website. Can you tell us more about how that trip impacted you and how it connects to the creation of the African American Folklorist magazine?
This is the irony of our conversation. Off the air, Ms. Janice asked me a question. To this, so there was a couple of deaths in my family at that time, okay? Let me set it up by saying my mother's side of family is from Natchez, Amorite, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Prior to 1800, that was pure Indian territory, specifically Gloucester, Mississippi. My daddy's people was from Gonzales and Belrose, Louisiana. So both sides of my family was separated by a stream. I'm not going to get into the stream. The stream is significant in the story of reclassification of Black folk, but that's not what we're talking about now.
Oh, deep. Okay.
Because the stream was named either by the Indians in honor of the French or by the French in honor of the Indians, but it was based on their relationship.
Right. Okay.
In Indian territory.
Okay.
Which is where all these Black folk come from. But anyway, I like throwing that out of your sources. Anyway, so I go, my pops loved Louisiana and he really loved New Orleans where he was born. And, I mean, you know, he went into a coma and passed prior to Katrina. So literally weeks prior to Katrina. So me and my brother and the family, we all go down to Louisiana. We stay in Harvey. We party in New Orleans. We go to church in New Orleans. Then we go and we drive out to the country. So to Miss Janice was why I never knew until this moment we were going to Belrose, because when I was a kid growing up, they would just say, we going to the country. When I was a young man, or, you know, 15 to 22, something like this, they would just say, we going to the country. Now, growing up in Brooklyn, New York, I'm like, well, we're in the country. I didn't think it'd get no more country than this. We're into the country. And then, you know, and you see it. So we go to the country, which in turn is Belrose, Louisiana.
Right.
And we're in this church. And next to the church, it's a burial ground just for Pearlies. So the Pearlie family has a burial ground. So then we go across the dirt road to a shotgun house, which is where the repass is.
Okay.
And seeing family that I didn't see in a long time, and in some family I was meeting, but we heard of each other, but no.
Right.
All of this to Black spirituals, Phil Hollis and the Blues. This is what's playing.
Hmm.
And I'm told that this whole place, Belrose, like 95% Pearlies.
Wow.
It was crazy. So I come back and I talk to my mama. Because I have, you know, and I'm like, you know, Ma, what's going on?
You got questions.
Yeah, and she's telling me because both sides. So this is when I realized my family was part of the, not just the music, but the migration. Because like I said, my mother was born in Chicago. So they come from Mississippi, like I said, and they go to Chicago.
Which was a very common path, Mississippi right. to Chicago, yep.
My pop's parents, they just went from New Orleans to Brooklyn. Gonzales, we, you know, and we got people in Baton Rouge and all this. But so.
Interesting, I don't mean to interject, but I find a lot of folks from Louisiana, they typically went out west to like California. So in New York, because I'm also, you know, from New York, and I think you would probably agree, you don't meet too many folks from Louisiana in New York City.
Not in our age group, no. So when both sides of my peoples come, there are people in my grandparents' age group.
Right.
Some too.
Okay.
Right. Not necessarily with them, but most of them went to, like you said, other places, but sprinkled around New York City. Mm-hmm. There were some folk from the country, more so on the Mississippi side, though.
Yeah. Definitely.
Right. So my granddaddy, people from Mississippi, predominantly in Detroit, in Chicago.
Okay. Yep. Another big spot, too. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, the Louisiana folk went to either Baton Rouge, Georgia, Houston, Texas, mm-hmm. you know, like that. So I come back and I'm asking questions because I kind of put this together, this pieces together. And part of the story is I was a rapper for a while and I couldn't write no songs. I couldn't do anything.
Mm.
I was stuck. You know, and my brother started thinking, well, I don't like his beats, but that wasn't the case. I was just stuck until I come back from here.
Mm.
Because the ancestors spoke to me.
That's right.
And told me what to do. So I went out and I bought my first banjo, my first guitar. I got like 7 guitars and started there. I never played one until that moment. When I kind of realized that my family was part of the Great Migration and the music comes. So I come back to New York listening to Black spirituals and blues, right? Mm-hmm. And not just the blues that my granddaddy from Belrose, because he was a musician, he was a singer, he was in gospel troops, he led gospel troops, and he had programs to take young folk around the Chitlin' Circuit. They put out albums. Yes. Not my mom's pops, who was friends with all these Mississippi guitarists. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, and so they tell, you know, I'm being directed.
Yes.
So now I'm looking for people who have this same experience. And I'm only finding non-Black folk interested in the blues, and I'm getting kind of frustrated. But at the same time, these non-Black folk, these white folk, are like, yo, I'm so happy you are invested and interested in your culture. And I'm like, what's this guy talking about? And on the flip side, some of our people told, but why are you into this slave music? And I'm like, so
right.
Facebook and YouTube got me vexed. I'm hearing, you know, and some of our leadership from way back when talking about we don't have a culture. We don't have a history. My mom always told me we did. I just wasn't completely sure until this moment. Mm-hmm. And then I see, you know, people on my timeline. I'm not a Macklemore fan, but what I was upset with was the fact that they're barking on him at the same time they're throwing the music away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I read an article calling socially motivated films exploitation. Like, I don't know if you ladies ever seen the movie Five on the Black Hand Side.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Heard of it.
Mm-hmm. That's not a blaxploitation film. It has humor. Who right. has not a blaxploitation film? It has humor, right? Cleopatra Jones is not a blaxploitation film. Could it be technically better? But we talk about a 6'1" dark skinned woman with natural hair driving a stick shift in the year of white male testosterone. That's socially motivated.
Right, right.
So I just had enough of all right. of this. And I began documenting everything that's part of our story. And I call it Talking About the Blues. This is how I get here.
Love it.
The long-winded version, but it stems from Belrose, where you found apparently a relative of mine.
Oh. Oh.
Well, that's a major impact, though, to go, you know, to go return to where your family's from and then to come back and be impacted that way. And like you said, to be guided and led
and
to
inspired.
A particular type. Mm-hmm.
You know,
I didn't even tell you my mama's daddy's part of that because he died not too long after. And so he was a veteran. But at this time, he's living in Washington, Maryland, where he's buried here, actually. I need to go see him, right? And at the repast, all our family from Mississippi, Detroit, and Chicago comes. And it's the same exact experience. Mm-hmm. Same music, same conversation.
And, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking too about how, and it's not at all a knock on hip hop at all, but I have felt like the community, you know, Black folks, the blues people, Black Americans, African Americans, however way, we've just kind of been like stuck in hip hop. And I feel like, you know, sounds change, times change. You know, and that's fine. Sometimes art forms don't quite, you know, go along with as society moves, but the catalog of music that we have produced over time, the airways should be like so much more robust than they are. And there, I feel like should not have been such a reason to feel so like this tunnel vision with hip hop. And it has its place, it's dope, it's a great storytelling outlet, but it is not the only, you know, music form that we've created. And it's interesting because case in point with my family, like we're from, you know, I was born in the Bronx and my family, you know, we're from like North Harlem, South Bronx area, which is considered, you know, to some people, the birthplace of hip hop. We were not big listeners of hip hop, you know, like it was there. It was in the soundtrack of the streets, if you will. But, you know, it wasn't necessarily, you know, that was for like the young kids. It's not what my grandmother was listening to. It's not what my grand aunt was listening to. And, you know, as a result, that's not necessarily what my mother gravitated towards. So it is important to kind of highlight other art that we have created and other musical forms and hold on to that. And I think that, you know, we've definitely taken it for granted. Recently, I had the opportunity to go to Americana Fest in Tennessee, which was, you know, an eye-opening event for me because, you know, I don't know a whole lot about, you know, folk music and that way on the ground, but I got to see more Black artists who are doing, and younger Black artists who are, you know, part of the Black folk music scene and, you know, the Black blues scene. And it was, you know, it was really great to see. It was really, really great to see. So I hear what you're saying, and it's, you had that calling, you know, for a reason. And it's really, really good to, you know, sometimes we have these experiences with our ancestors and our family or whatever, we go back to the ground, if you will. And we pick up something, like we pick up a gem.
Right.
And right. That could be the game changer. That could be the catalyst.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you just eloquently described my story. That was the catalyst that led to answer your question, the African-American folklorist.
Love and, it.
You know, short, it's a little longer than that, but that's good.
So what do you want readers to come away with when they read this magazine? It's a beautiful magazine, by the way. And, you know, what's the goal when they read it? What should they come away with?
So the first goal, and Mrs. Pearlie reminds me never to forget this, because when I was, before I could sell it to anyone, I had to sell it to the wisdom. Mm-hmm. My first goal and mission is to be the incubator, if you will, between the laypersons and academia, right? Because if you remember, early on, who are these, when they were collecting these stories of so-called Black folk, who was for, right? It was for other academics, right?
Right.
And they were collecting it in the 60s when they were head over heels over our traditional music, and they have what they call the revival scene, or when British white boys came over here playing our music to us.
Mm-hmm.
But the people of the white people on our land wouldn't listen to it from us. You know, we need a situation, I felt, a void for this kind of information, not super duper filled with jargon, but for the average person to be able to read and receive and want to dig deeper and know about their people, not necessarily just Black people, but their people, you know, their people in the context of the whole, you know. I want people who read it, know of it, to submit. And even if they don't want to submit to me, to the African American folklorists, right? I want them to be triggered, like you said, right? That moment, and go find, if they're lucky enough, if they're blessed to be able to still physically speak to a grandparent or a parent, right? Mine are all trans, their ancestors, both at all, you know. But if any of you all still have parents or grandparents, great aunts, great uncles, whatever, I want the magazine to inspire you to go with your phone or a tape recorder and sit down and say, hey, can we talk? I got some questions.
That's right. Inspire that curiosity in people.
Right, yeah, because so often, one, and this is just getting away from someone else documenting our story, so often when an elder passes, that's when we have all the questions.
Right. It's true.
You know, I was fortunate that this kind of behavior was not frowned upon in my house. So, I was able to get some things. I have one uncle and one aunt. But no, we still have people that are in connections besides those two elders. But the point I'm saying is I was able to get some of my mom. But as for the grandparents, I wasn't able to document them. But I was able to ask questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people I've spoken with that want to ask questions, or what they actually say is, I wish I asked when.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
So that's really, if nothing else, go to the lady in your building or in your neighborhood that before was popular, right? And when guns was blazing on the street, and she's cleaning and growing a little garden bed in front of your building, go talk to that lady. Get her story. She's significant to the community. Stuff like this.
I always share that time is of the essence. You know, some people are like, oh, you know, I'll get to it. And, you know, we talk about this as historians, family historians, and having a love for genealogy is that, how many times do we sit there? I know for me and my grandmother, she was like 97, 98 when she passed away. And she told me a lot. But when she was gone, there was just so much more that I wish that I'd asked her. So, you know, that point is really to take a tape recorder, talk to them, document, and their stories matter. Their stories are just as important as anyone else's.
Right. Because we wouldn't be here without this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the magazine is distributed through the Jack Dapa Blues Heritage Foundation. Can you share with us a little more about this foundation?
Absolutely. So with the story that I shared with you, my journey to getting to this point and deciding to documenting all this and being frustrated with the coon funery, if you will, that was going around, I felt the urgency. My family, my nucleus, we felt an urgency to do something, right? So I created my first website, was Talking About the Blues, where I just interviewed everybody I could find. And I was having the darndest time finding Black folk, and I was really frustrating. But to make a long story short, Jack Dapa Blues is the culmination of all that early work.
Okay.
Jack Dapa Blues Heritage Preservation Foundation is the culmination of all that work. And the whole goal is to be a focal point of this research and study and information in archival. It's a repository. That's basically what it is. It's a private foundation, a nonprofit. And outside of media, multimedia and broadcasting, our biggest contribution is the magazine.
And a beautiful magazine it is.
Thank you.
I just wanted to go back really quickly. You talked about instruments and how, you know, part of what you got out of that trip going to the Deep South was, you know, getting guitars and other instruments. So did you like teach yourself how to play? Like, how did that go? What was that
process? Yes, ma'am. I did use YouTube.
Okay. YouTube University.
To do it how our people do it, you can only teach yourself your story. So I had a mentor and a friend. My childhood friend's pops used to do songs with this guy. He was a drummer and songwriter for Sky, right? Mr. Tommy McCullough.
Oh, okay.
And he was a dear, dear friend and a mentor. And I had hurt my back and I was on medication laying down. And I called him to tell him my auntie passed because she was in a wheelchair, but she would go to him to record her CDs.
Hmm.
I introduced them because I knew him since I was 12 when I was trying to be a little rapper. But anyway, he and I were talking and I was explaining to him, outside of what I just explained to you, that I was trying to practice and learn this instrument because there's something inside of me, I got to get it out. And his response to me was, you know, he went through a whole story of how they used to practice in the park all the time. He said, but his mentor, in fact, told him, stop practicing and just play. And then he follows up by saying to me, you think our ancestors when they was sharecropping or when they was working in the fields or doing all this stuff, you think they was practicing or was they just singing?
That's a good point.
So that changed my trajectory. And, you know, along the way, I met some great folk that are musicians for real, and they've given me great pointers over the years.
That's great. That's great. That's really, really cool that you were able to do that. And I was just lamenting on my own previously about, you know, the lack of arts, how it's been cut in a lot of schools, especially in the inner city, you know, particularly in the 80s and stuff like that, where it's like it's weird. It's like we almost have more access in a way back in the day, you know, and now we have all this abundance, like that got, you know, gutted and taken away. So it's really kind of awesome that, you know, people are finding ways to rediscover that art. Because like you said, sometimes you have something in you and you have to get it out. So speaking of young folks, can you share with us more about the magazine's emerging folklorist segment?
Absolutely. I used to call it the youth section. And that had worked with some interns some of them were in college right out of high school. And some of them were in their early 20s, and they informed the old man that young folk don't like to be called young, which I just didn't understand. But, you know, so it is from ages 10 to 23, but it also it's also for those who feel they're amateurs or beginning in folklore or ethnography, if you will. And it's our way of highlighting and introducing the craft to them at an early age. Because I didn't realize what I've been doing for a long time, majority of my life was folklore, right? As you saw my folklorist of the month, a lot of the folklorists that I interviewed came into it by default. We didn't know this was a thing. So I'm being intentional in trying to introduce this to young Black folk, but young folk period, right? Not just people of color, because I'm an advocate for, I don't care what your folk group is, your ethnicity, excuse me, whatever. A representative from said group should document said group.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an advocate for that. So I just think we should be intentional. Well, we are being intentional. I'm being intentional by having this section of the magazine to hopefully inspire and recruit, because we're not just the incubator, right? But we're a recruitment center for the field.
That's great.
Yeah. And I like how, you know, you believe that that's important. I mean, we do as well, that young people should be involved in storytelling or capturing stories with their family, or as you mentioned earlier, the community person. And I was thinking, you know, I don't hear the term folklore a lot. And a lot of people sometimes, you know, the perception is, oh, that's way back then, but so many people are into storytelling now, capturing stories, combining, you know, we have one colleague, she takes the Underground Railroad stories and just brings them to life. Every time I see a caption or something by her, I stop and I realize it. So, you know, I made a note, stories are important. What happened in someone's life is important. And when we do our presentations and all, we always say, you know, you don't have to be a celebrity. If you find somebody that did something major, hey, cool. But all of our stories, they matter. They just do. And so I was thinking, as you were speaking earlier, about folklorists, you've inspired me to want to look up additional ones. But there's one that I stumbled across, and he's white. He was white, rather. And this was way, way back. And I actually found out in researching him through a surname that he's actually connected to our family. And his name, I was just curious, have you ever heard of John Henry Falk? I believe he was from Texas, and he would go around, and his last name is spelled F-A-U-L-K, which is one of my major surnames. And he would go around to different people to capture their stories, but he would also go in the Black community and capture their stories. And so, you know, people are of all backgrounds, and Terracotta and I, we talk about this all the time. Your family story or your community story is more important than you realize. And a lot of people are coming in that may not necessarily look like you and gathering their stories. And the next thing you know, they're publishing a book about it. So that tells you something right there. I always tell people, oh, well, my family was this, my family, they don't have to be famous. So I can read about anybody's family and be inspired or like, wow, I never knew that happened. I was on your website earlier today, Terracotta and I were having a conversation, and you have a story on there about numbers, like the numbers runners in the community, right?
Yes.
And I'm sitting there going, well, I used to hear that, oh, go around the corner and play my numbers, and they weren't necessarily going to a store. It wasn't like the That's official right. lottery, but there is history to that, and there's so yeah. many communities, or how many times have, you know, you heard about something. It's like, well, what does that mean? So I love your website and the stories that you're capturing. And I mean, just really, really inspired, you know, to
I
add
love
more
that you
to
said that about numbers, because my oh, great yeah. aunt, and not even not to put her out there, but even she literally said, she was like, this is my culture. Like I come from numbers runners myself. Like, you know, she played it, her dad played it. You know, they kind of knew about, you know, what's his name, Frank Lucas and all them. Like, I mean, it was part of the culture. Like, it just, that's what it was. So I love that you brought that up, Janice. That was like, I felt that.
Yeah, well, both of you, when you get a chance, check him out. His name was John Henry Faulk, F-A-U-L-K. And I stumbled across him, like I said, because I was looking for that surname, but he would actually go into Black communities and capture their stories. And even when you look at, I'm sorry?
The name sounds familiar, and I challenge you to write an article about him and submit it into the African American Folklorist.
Oh, listen, I got some stories for you. Terracotta can tell you that. We got some stories for you, you know. So sure. So my whole thing is anyone that's willing to listen, I tell them, I'm like, start writing, start researching, start documenting. And you said something so, you know, we say, oh, it's profound, but then again, it's like basic. Go talk to your elders now. Go talk to them now and capture those stories. Or there could be, we call it family lore, right? Prove that story out. If you're not sure about it, prove it out. My family, you know, they always said, oh, well, your great-grandfather was Native. I'm like, yeah, I haven't found it yet. I haven't found it. But I kept working on it and I proved it out. Or, you know, my perception of a grandfather being an official alcohol salesman. Well, when I pressed my grandmother to get more about that, he was not an official, you know what I'm saying? Like putting on a suit, I'm thinking he's going to a suit, you know, like this was his profession. It's like, no, he made it. But that's a major story when you look at bootlegging, or you go into newspaperarchives.com and put in, bootleg and look at all the articles. And when I did that, so I found an article for my husband's great grandfather, where he made so much of that stuff that he was like hiding out in the woods for like a whole week. And the police were like, yeah, we're just going to take shifts and wait for you and get you out of there. And when they found him, they talked about how much alcohol they found, right? So my question was, well, did they really destroy it or did they use it?
Mm-hmm.
Those are like major stories. And then the other part, and then I'm done, is that your family stories in line with the historical context of what was going on in this country, no matter what time frame you look at, we're there. Your ancestors were there. It's not some isolated thing. Every major event that you can look at in this country, somebody's family was there. Go find out and tell the story.
That's right.
Right. I just want to say that family lore and folklore doesn't necessarily equate to it not being true, right?
Right.
Folklore is the behavior, the traditions, the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Just to say a few things of what we document, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just powerful.
Yeah, that's actually really good. Do you really quickly before we kind mm-hmm. of wrap up, did you want to sort of like define some of those things, like folklore? I like where you were going with that.
Right.
Well, yeah, because I just think that, I know there's a misnomer because most people don't know. And a lot of Black folk mm-hmm. don't use that term, right?
Right.
There's a thing called African folklore, but I don't know if Africans use that, right? Folklore, the term, is really a European or Western a word, right? But what it actually is for all of us is the traditions, the patterns and traditions and behaviors, right? The informal teachings that happen in groups, you know, behaviors like and the rituals.
Mm.
Speak to each other, right? This is all folklore. And folklorists, we study and engage these things. Applied folklorists, we take our findings and try to utilize it to cause or inspire some sort of social or justice change. Mm.
You said rituals. Yeah, but when he said rituals, I was like, okay, we're not going to try to start like two interviews here. But rituals, I just want to say this one. I was reading through a book and they talked about, and it just rang. I mean, when I tell you, it took me back to when we would attend funerals. You know, you talked about going to a funeral and how, you know, you were inspired. Well, one of the things that I remember them doing was taking a child and passing them over at the burial site, taking the youngest child there and passing them over. And I was reading a book about that and I'm like, wow. And so I said, the next time I talk to a family member in South Carolina, I'm going to ask them, do they still do that? Because they did that all throughout my childhood, but when I lived in South Carolina, and that whole tradition was like just a blessing for the child, or they believed that, it would ward off negativity or evil spirits. I mean, there were just so many things that were done, or we didn't have like formal headstones at one point. So they put colored glass. They would put colored glass on the grave site. So just don't want to lose all of those things that some of our folks used to do.
Yeah.
That people like right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Or even not putting your bag on the purse on the floor so your money don't get low.
That's right.
Or the way that you end the year is the way that you'll start the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't
a whole nother conversation.
Okay. I know. That's why I said, let me just stop. So what are some parting words you would like to share with our listeners, Lamont?
I think I'll reiterate, I don't care who you are and what your folk group is. If you don't feel the wherewithal to do it, designate someone to document your peoples. Mm-hmm. You know, that's right. I mean, there's nothing better than owning your story.
It's your people's story now. I like that. Own your story.
Own story, yes.
And if you don't tell it, somebody else is, and we'll probably make some money off of it while you're sitting there going, that's my story. That's my family story.
That's right. You'll be saying, that's my family story, and it didn't happen that way, and they're getting paid for telling it.
Right. Yeah.
Because the second, the middle part is really what burns me. It didn't happen that way, but you still have the gall to tell the story, let alone get paid on it. Own your story.
Own your story. I like that. Lamont, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. Can you let our listeners know where they can find out more about you and the magazine?
Absolutely. Jack Dapper Blues Radio, at Jack Dapper Blues Radio, at AAF Newspaper, I think. Or just, you know what, you can Google the African American folklorist and you can Google Jack Dapper Blues and everything, you'll find it all.
Yep. Okay. And he's active on Instagram.
It's all of it, because I can't remember all these handles.
I know the feeling.
we'll list them for you.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. We're the same way sometimes at one point. We were like, we're on Facebook, Twitter, where else are we at? We thank our listeners for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.